You know, people actually buy mufflers to make their vehicle sound louder.
Yeah, those are the people that I hate.
Me too.
My wife always makes fun of me because we'll be sitting at like a stoplight and some guy on a hog will pull up beside me. I always put the windows up and just get so frustrated, run them off the road, drive them over a few times.
Well, I can't stand it. And myself, I like to drive. I like to listen to my music. I don't like to listen to other vehicles and mufflers.
Exactly.
I don't like the smell of exhaust, and I don't like the smell of other people's vehicle fumes. So it kind of ticks me off. I'm with you. If I could literally commit vehicular homicide against somebody so people get away with it, I would do it.
This is Sass What, the podcast of my blog, which is called Sass What. And tonight I'm joined by Sean Forker. You may know him from such prior accomplishments as the Sasquatch Experience and Beyond the Edge, as well as he had a major part in what's the name of the organization you helped start? Because I know there's at least one.
I'm the director of the Keystone Bigfoot Project, which is kind of my baby right now. I helped form the original American Bigfoot Society, which is now kind of, it's a different organization with the same name. Melissa Hovey runs it, who, you know, is a good friend of mine. I don't want anybody to take that as a negative because it's not, because some people will. And there's a BigfootResearch.com, which is the Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers. I'm on their board of directors, the PA Bigfoot Society, of course, which I play a big hand in now. But I do a lot. I'm really, well, not at the moment, but I was quite active in Bigfoot research. The last couple months have been kind of dry for me here. We've been
We're just
conferenced out.
Oh, okay.
April, May has, like, that's, I must have put 1,200 miles on my vehicle just going back and forth to Ohio. For the different conferences, which were good times. You were at the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. We got the interface there for like 10 minutes because that was a wild place.
That was nuts.
Most people I've seen at a Bigfoot conference. Now, before that, the biggest gate I remember being a part of at a Bigfoot conference was the 2008 East Coast Bigfoot Conference. There were like 600 and some people that attended that. This last Ohio Bigfoot Conference that we were at kind of blew, I think that blew it away. I don't know how many actual people attended, but I remember Friday going into the lodge, like talking to Craig Woolheater, worried that the place was going to collapse because there were so many people.
Yeah, from what Mark has said, the lodge claimed there were 3,000 people through there, that were involved with the conference in some way. I know when it comes to attendees, it was like 700.
I mean, you got to look at what the catalyst for that was. That's the, you know, finding Bigfoot's been really popular, and regardless what anybody thinks of the shows, you know, it gets people interested into what we do. Maybe gives us a little better gives them a better understanding of what we do, good or bad, and it brings people to these conferences. And some people made some money off that, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to me about the Alliance for, what is it? The Alliance for Independent Bigfoot Researchers.
The Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers is kind of like, when it originally started off, it was supposed to be BFRO 2.0, and I don't think it really got to the level of hype that it wanted to. It has really spread out across the country of independent researchers. Kind of gives us an umbrella to network under, and there's scientific applications behind it, perhaps to get people into some grants and, you know, actually put some legitimacy back into a field that I think really needs it. And that, and I hate using that term because it really sounds snobbish, but I guess at some point I am because I've been doing this a lot longer. Don't let this angelic face fool you, folks. I've been doing this a lot longer than most people have been in it, and we are really starting to see an influx of interest in it, in the field because of these television shows. And again, that's not a bad thing. But I think what a lot of the researchers today lack is that mentorship from some of the people that have been in this from way back, which I've been fortunate to have a decent set of mentors that still kind of guide me and keep my head on straight. And the Alliance of Independent Bigfoot Researchers is kind of on that point, to network with established researchers, kind of get us a scientific background. And at the same time, get people to agree to a set amount of principles. And I guess, you know, that's kind of where you go to the no-kill, pro-kill. This is a no-kill organization. I myself am a no-kill guy personally. I'm not going to bag one. Doesn't necessarily mean I'm against the idea of someone doing it. And I guess I still struggle with that. And I've struggled with it for a long time, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, that we should kill one. But, in all things science, a body's necessary. That's nothing's going to change that. I don't think even National Geographic quality documentary footage will prove definitively that this creature exists. I think we're going to need something substantial on that. But the IBR, getting back to the main point that you asked, because, I go on more tangents than we do on Wikipedia. It's just a major umbrella to get people active into Bigfoot research and kind of get a place where we can share information, share reports. It is a report citing outlet. You can go to BigfootResearch.com and report your sighting. And, kind of like the other Bigfoot research organizations out there, just on a much larger scope with a board of directors that kind of sets guidance for the group, and a board of advisors that's got folks on there like John Green, Dr. John Mayanzinski, who I got to meet at the Creature Weekend conference. Really interesting guy. He spoke on some things that I didn't think about before, and he was just a really, really all-around great dude. That was a good conference, too, for those folks that missed it. And that's pretty much the IBR.
What was it exactly that kicked this all off for you?
Well, I think I grew up in a family. Well, I don't think I did grow up in a family with where we always talked about, the paranormal and strange creatures. And I remember the first book that I remember looking at on Bigfoot wasn't really a Bigfoot book. It was a book called Monsters by Vincent Price, of all things. And that book's probably pretty rare, and I have a copy up in my attic. And reading that about the Abominable Snowman and the Sasquatch. And then there was Arthur C. Clarke's Mysterious World and In Search Of, that I caught in syndication, because I wasn't born until 85. So those shows have already, been off the air by the time, first runs were still going on. And it really started when we were on a trip to my uncle's house in Virginia Beach, and my dad got a book, because I wouldn't shut up, called Sasquatch, The Apes Among Us. He just happened to pick it up. And I read that book the entire vacation, and I was hooked. And I've never got to meet John Green, which I guess I should get a jump start on that, because he's not going to be around forever. And but John Green was kind of the guy that really, pumped me and got me excited. His works were the ones that got me excited about this Bigfoot creature. Then fast forward a few years, when I was 16, 17 years old, I got a hold of Eric Altman, and Eric got me involved in research in Pennsylvania, and it kind of went off from there. So John Green.
So John Green, you actually ended up getting to talk to on Sasquatch Experience.
Yeah, years ago.
Yeah, right. Twice?
I think so, twice.
I think there were two episodes.
It's been so long, but that was like the highlight of my life up to that point. I had kids. I love my kids, but talking to John Green was pretty special to me. And I've never, like I said, I've never gotten to meet him in person, and I'd love to. And he just speaks with such an authority on things. Rather folks agree with him or not, he's a man that's really dedicated a good portion of his life and a good, portion of his, personal finance to the Sasquatch mystery. And I think it's funny and maybe frustrating for him that I think the research that John Green and Renee DeHinden and, Patterson and Gimlin and the old guard did, we've not really come any further than where they started. We still hold a lot of their work into high esteem, and I don't think we've done anything better, and someone can try to prove me wrong, but, Patterson Gimlin film to many people is still the Holy Grail, and a lot of the work that was done in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, when John Green went across the country and talked to different researchers, I don't think we've gotten anything better since that time.
Do you do a lot of field work? Do you have time for a lot of field work?
I do, actually. Last year I spent quite a bit of time in the field, and this year, aside from conferences, we haven't done a whole lot. I don't do the cold anymore. I got pneumonia a couple times, and I just don't mess around with the real cold. It's not fun.
Did you even
nice to be out there?
Do you have any, did you ever have any really good results with being out in the cold?
In the cold, we've had some pretty interesting sounds out there, and we've had some pretty interesting things with things thrown at us. But, of course, things being thrown doesn't really, say anything. But we've had some pretty good results in an area that had already had activity. So I'm a kind of a believer. At this point, I've kind of changed my tune on it. You can go out to any woods and try to act, and get try to act out Bigfoot noises and try to get results. But I think it means a little bit more when you're doing it in an area that's had some activity.
Yeah.
And those areas are the areas I kind of stick to now. Maybe not really well known on a map where we can go to a Bigfoot website and say, well, this whole area of Pennsylvania looks good. Let's do here. But areas where we've gotten reports from, up in the northern tier of the state, up in the Allegheny National Forest and around those areas, maybe a couple counties over, are really ripe spots, I think, for Bigfoot activity, and nobody goes there. So you and I had talked occasionally off the air,
yeah,
and in Messenger about, you know, certain parts of Pennsylvania seem to be really hot, and I think there are a lot of parts of Pennsylvania that are really hot. It's just you have to remember with the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, like most of the members in that organization, in our organization, are in the southwestern part of the state. In fact, I think 80% of the membership is from the southwestern part of the state. So, you know, with all the events and everything that Eric's done out that way and just the notoriety that Stan Gordon has got, that reputation he has in that area, a lot of the reports in that area go to them. But nowhere else in the state do we get a lot of reports from unless somebody happens to be out there, you know, specifically searching on Google for, you know, report your Bigfoot sighting. Now that's changed because we have of my team of investigators is out here in the northeastern, you know, north central part of the state, and we're getting out there. And the more we get out there, word of mouth is starting to spread that there are people involved in this part of the state that are actively seeking and want to take historical Bigfoot sighting reports. I want them all, mainly because I'm greedy, but I want to look at the data. I want to map it. I want to see if there's any trends we could take a look at and help us deploy more efficiently. And wouldn't that be great if we could plug this all into a thing like, hey, Google Earth? You know, thank you, Google, for providing all these great services that, you know, we tend to take advantage of and abuse, and be able to look at it over time and see, you know, well, maybe in 1996, you know, we might have had a handful of Bigfoot reports, but they all happened in the spring, all during a new moon, and, you know, average temperature this time. You know, maybe that sounds like it's a good time we should deploy instead of, like, every Tuesday of the month we'll go out and eat some chicken and have some fun looking for Bigfoot. You know, you could be a little bit more specific with it and, you know, maybe get a lot more evidence. And I don't think, you know, I think that's the way we're going to start going. So a lot of the research that's been done lately by my group, the Keystone Bigfoot Project, is looking at all the data that we can from every organization. So if I've borrowed your work, you should be credited with it on the website, and I thank you, because it's important that we look at all this. And there are a lot of reports from the PA Bigfoot Society that aren't even put on a database that I need to get to Eric's house so I can take my little scanner and start scanning all that through, because I want that data. I told you, I'm getting greedy. I want it all, because I want to look at this, and I want to start seeing if there's patterns. Or maybe there's no patterns, and we're all just nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, but we just have to look at something and try to be smarter about what we're doing, because you can drop in a lot of money. You know, let's look at finances, okay? Why hasn't Bigfoot been discovered? One, we don't have a scientific organization backing us, okay? There's no – National Geographic is not paying us, you know, $2 million to go out and look for Bigfoot. Gas is near $4 a gallon. And for me to get anywhere where there's some activity, I either got to go 35 miles north of my house or like 200 miles to my west to areas where there's Bigfoot sightings. So if you guys want to start funding my research, I'll come out there and I'll do it all the time. But that's not counting camping costs, equipment costs. You know, the average Bigfoot researcher, you know, is operating on a limited income for expenditures. You know, most of us have mortgages. Most of us have bills, you know, that come first. I have kids. You know, they have teeth and they have eyes that need taken care of. So, you know, my Bigfoot surplus budget isn't exactly a surplus anymore. I have to start being smarter about it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks are feeling that crunch. So we don't have that independent third party, you know, funding us endlessly with money to do this research. So we got to do with what we got. And I got to start being a lot smarter about it. And I think Bigfooters in general need to be a lot smarter about it. How are we going to – what's the future of this research going to look like? Are we going to jump out in the woods and start beating trees and screaming like a bunch of idiots? Or are we going to start looking at data, start communicating with each other, and start finding a better way to do it? And that's, you know, where I've been wrapping my head around the last couple of years, because I kind of went silent, Seth, for a while. I kind of just went dark. I didn't really want to have a lot to do with it anymore because the personalities were starting to get to me. And I was always a pretty strong personality. Privately, I was threatened by an individual who I won't name because that'll just add fuel to the fire. Who was not a fan of mine. And
I want to know. I'm gonna have to know.
We'll talk about it off air.
Okay, so, great.
But it was kind of uncomfortable for a little bit. And, you know, life got in the way. I had a third kid, and I needed to start, you know, allocating, you know, time to some things that were more important at the time and still more important. Nothing takes precedence over the kids. And so that's where we're kind of at with that. So I'm ready to jump back into this with both feet. I've been ready. My team is ready. They've been deployed. We've been working on some active cases, and we're just ready to go to kick some arse and take some names and start looking at some data so we can start getting some results.
Okay, so moving away from that, what was it that – when did Sasquatch Experience start up?
Oh, I think 06.
Okay, 06. So you were – I mean, I would say podcasting became – came into its own in like 04, 05. I mean, there was podcasting going on before that, but I don't think that people were as aware of it. And honestly, even in 06 when you were starting up, it was not, I mean, you started on Blog Talk. Mm-hmm. What was it? First of all, actually, tell any of our listeners what exactly Sasquatch Experience was.
Well, Sasquatch Experience was a weekly, sometimes bi-weekly kind of talk podcast radio program where we just discussed Bigfoot, talked about Bigfoot personalities, and interviewed those in the field, past, present, you know, to get their opinions on current events and what they've been doing, kind of a check-in show. And I did that with Henry May for a long time, and I went back and forth on that a little bit. We had a lot of different co-hosts and tried to make it fun and entertaining. Some folks didn't care for it too much. Other folks loved it. It's what you have with anything. I always kind of enjoyed doing it because it was fun. You got to talk to researchers, and it became kind of an outlet for us to become connected to one another a little closer. So Steve Coles, I think, if I can – I'm going to go to the lineage on this. I think Artists First, Bigfoot Central was the first talk program on Bigfoot, podcast kind of live stream on Bigfoot. Then I believe it was Steve Coles with the Squatch Detective. Then Sasquatch Experience came along, and at the time on Blog Talk, it was just Steve Coles and myself doing Bigfoot podcasting. And then Billy Willard came on with Sasquatch Watch. And keep in mind, these are gentlemen I've become friends with. You know, while we were doing the shows and we became a network for one another, we shared guests a lot. So when you go back to those shows that started, you know, there aren't too many people. Aren't too many shows going on. I know Steve Coles is still kicking, doing his program. And Billy Willard was off for a while, and he came back. And Bob Coyne and them are gone now. But there's been so many that have popped up after that. But really, when you start talking about the first shows, it was Steve Coles and myself that really started kicking off these Bigfoot podcasts.
So future research and possible podcasting, what do you got going on?
Well, I'm working a little bit on the Forkcast right now, which is a pre-recorded, just kind of variety ditty I'm doing with some of my friends. We'll be coming along talking about whatever happens to be on our mind, not really crypto-related. I'd like to do Sasquatch Experience again. I think it's time that I returned and took my place at the helm and start. You know, you can only complain about things for so long. And if you're not going to be active in it, you're not going to try to change the course of where things are going, then you don't have the right to complain about it. And things need to change. And, you know, I've never been one for sitting on the sidelines, and I like to get my hands dirty. I like to be involved. And I don't know any of these new people anymore. That's what bothers me. You know, I was walking through the Ohio Bigfoot Conference, and some lady's like, here's a postcard. You know, you can have the speaker sign this. And I want to say, do you know who I am? I'm Sean Forkard. Yeah, people don't recognize you anymore. Not that it's ever been about that, but, you know, to be part of a field that you love so much, you know, you gotta stand out, and you gotta make your voice heard, especially if you're as passionate as I am about restoring legitimacy to what we're doing. You know, good or bad, when you talk about the guys from the old Texas Bigfoot Research Organization, now it's North American Wood Ape Conservancy, you know, they're real serious about what they do, and that's commendable. And, you know, we need more organizations to be serious and to take a stand and to, you know, really focus on what they want to do and do it.
All right. Sean, you're on Twitter, right?
I am Twitter, at Sean Forker. Everything I do is my name. I put my name on it, kind of like you do. If you're, if you know, just stand behind what you say. If you say it wrong, apologize later. At Sean Forker.
At Sean Forker on Twitter, and tune in next week for another episode.